Blog Talk Radio.
And we welcome you back to our latest episode of Your Home Buying Compass, where each month we get together to talk about things happening in the real estate market, looking at home buyers, home sellers, and all the things that impact their activities. And as we get together for these conversations, we are always joined by Realtor David Schwabe of the Schwabe Group, Compass Real Estate. David is a very busy gentleman these days, even with the market going through the changes it is at the moment, and he's hopping on just as we get started here. So first of all, David, good morning. Let's let you catch your breath and hopefully get into the conversation here. How are you?
Good morning, Jim. How are you today?
Doing well. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're rearranging things in the schedule to be with us, but we're going to have a conversation today that kind of helps buyers after they have bought a home, and obviously as a realtor, your concern is, you know, getting to that closing, but I know from experience that you stay very connected to your buyers and help them through the process. So today we'll take a little bit about what happens after that sale takes place. And first of all, you know, as we always do before we get into it, I always love to get from you a quick recap on where the market is at. It changes so rapidly. So as we head into Q4 here of 2023, what does the market look like to you?
Yes, it's a really interesting question. So right now we are, well, I think a 22-year high in interest rates. And I think we're going to talk about interest rates next meeting. But I think rates are nationally over 8%. But what I think is important for people to hear right now is this, is that there's still a bit of a shortage of inventory, at least in the Midwest. The prices of homes are still at highs, and it's still a great time to sell. And I think I alluded to this last time. I think it's a great opportunity this fall for people who want to get into the market to buy a home because I think there's going to be some, I might say deals, but a little bit discounted price in a few things in the fall and the winter, which there usually is. And maybe they'd have to refinance in the spring when the interest rates come back down, but time to buy and sell it for that matter.
Well, and you're exactly right. I'm looking forward to our November conversation about interest rates and how that's impacting the market and whether or not it's a good time to buy. So we'll save that, but I do want people to know that that's coming up. But it does lead into my first question today, which is, you know, when someone is saving to buy a home, and obviously interest rates impact the amount they have to spend or what their costs are going to look like, at least in the short term after they buy. But do you advise people when they're buying a home to always have some cash set aside, some available funds to tap into after they've closed on the house? Because things come up, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's really going to be interesting right now because at the higher interest rates, and when I say higher, it's higher what people are used to. They're not statistically that high. But I think that people are saying, hey, let's put more money down. So the question this week is how much money should we hold back for potential things to do in the house? Let me start by saying, by the way, that this is the amount of money you hold in available funds. There's one of the discussions that you have with your financial planner on emergency funds. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about additional funds for the house. So, for instance, when someone decides to buy a house, depends on the house, depends on what you want to do with it. Some people want to do a lot of updates, and that has to be factored in, obviously, in how quickly. But like normal things like IC and everything, people seem to want to replace carpeting all the time, even if it's – unless it's brand new. They seem to always want to replace it when they get back in the house. They say it's fine, but then they might want it. So always budget. They figure, hey, you might want to replace some flooring or redo the floors. People certainly have to have some funds to do some painting that maybe they didn't expect. And you know, appliances, you know, those are a wild card, right? People say, hey, the appliances are fine at the home inspection. They move in, they're like, oh, you know, I really love having a great Thanksgiving dinner in my house. So I really want a nice oven. So people go out and buy a brand new oven or that sort of thing. So these are the kind of things that you have to know as a person that you're going to end up spending money on in the short term when you move in.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are things that many that you mentioned there are choices. Those are things people go, I'd like to improve this, like to get something different. I know you have guided some buyers and assisted them with, I think they're called warranty programs for that first year in the home. You sort of buy a policy, and if something doesn't work, you may be covered. Is that still a tool that's out there that you recommend people use in certain cases?
Yeah, it's many times it's a stopgap. Let's say if a house, let's say someone's putting all the money they have in the world down to buy the house, right? Which, because maybe they need to get that 20% down for the lower interest rate, or maybe they are, you know, they have minimal funds, good income but minimal funds, so they put, you know, minimal down either way. But sometimes a seller will pay for it, and a buyer can do it themselves also. Seller will pay for a warranty that's 1 year, 2 year. That costs anywhere from $500 to $1,000 per year, depending on the house and how in-depth it goes. But those home warranties really protect you from almost anything in the house that's going to go wrong for a buyer after they buy the house, unless, and this is the caveat, unless it was a pre-existing. So if it shows up in your inspection report that the furnace is not working, you know, they're not going to fix it on the home warranty. But if the inspection report says, hey, it's beyond its useful life, the furnace is 29 years old, and it may not last long, that's okay. You know, it's operating at closing, and the home warranty will either cover, you know, basically repair it if there's a problem with a minimal minimum fee, or they will assist in trying to replace that for, you know, as little as possible. As little as possible.
And that, that's a good point. Because I was wondering, you know, would a buyer say, hey, I paid for an inspection, and, you know, now that I'm in home, certain things aren't working, why didn't the inspector catch it? But I don't think you're going to catch everything, certainly on a walkthrough. So I don't think you can necessarily tie those two together. The inspector should tell you the condition of things, but we all know things can happen, right? And that's where that warranty program might be valuable.
Yeah, so the warranty is important. And it's really so, for instance, things happen, right? So they move into the house, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a leak under the sink, right? And now that home warranty might, you know, if there's some plumbing issues or something, or if there's a leak in the attic or something, which would be very rare, by the way, because you should catch that. But if there was some changes in the weather and something occurred, and you never know what could happen, right? And those warranties will cover those sorts of things that were not expected.
We're always expecting good conversation with Realtor David Schwabe of the Schwabe Group. We're getting that today on your home buying compass as we talk about some of the things that might come up after you purchase a home. And we're going to continue on with that conversation here. And just remind you can always reach David at 847-636-6747 to continue conversations like this or get into questions that we don't always have time for. And in one of our previous discussions, David, we talked about seasonality and how, depending on what time of year you buy a home, there's certain things you can't see. If you're buying in winter, you might not really get a good sense of the landscaping. If you're buying in summer, you might not understand all the things that happen with the heat or snow and everything else. So I assume that's part of this planning process is if you see a home and buy a home in winter, you don't really know what you're going to need in landscaping. So it's maybe a good idea to have some money set aside for those kind of things. So just based on time of year, I'm sure there's things that will always come up and you have to account for that one way or the other.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of it has to do with the choices and what the buyer is like. So, for instance, every fall, my wife loves to go out and get mums and puts them all over the front of the house, right? And then that's something that she does, and we do in our house. And our neighbor has this amazing, amazing display for the Thanksgiving, Halloween, right? And if you're a buyer that wants to do that, hey, I not only want to buy a house, but I want to do this. We did this growing up, or you know, I love the way my neighbor did this. You know, if you know that's what you want to do, yes. Or, for instance, the backyard. Yeah, it's you know, the first spring thaw came out and wow, there's mud everywhere, right? We need to put some grass seed or put some sod down. I didn't realize that when I bought it. Or maybe they absolutely loved the flowers that were coming up and realized those weren't, you know, those weren't perennials. Those were annuals. So
yeah.
That's the kind of thing, yes, as you go through it. The bigger one, though, would be, for instance, they might, you know, the home inspection came through and all the windows were operational in good condition and that sort of thing. But that first winter comes in, you're like, wow, this house maybe doesn't have the insulation that we need, right? So it passed the inspection, of course, but now maybe I need to put some additional insulation in the attic for winterization. Maybe I want to replace some of the windows in the kids' rooms, right, because it's a little chilly in there. That's the kind of thing that you don't know until you certainly live in the house, right?
Yeah. And to go back and quote you again on another point you'd shared with us, when you said when a buyer's looking at a home, you know, don't necessarily look at what's in there. You've got your own furniture and your own art and your own style of things, and see how mentally prepare how that's going to look in this new home. That probably works the other way too. You think your stuff is good, and then you get it in the home, and you go, "Boy, I don't like that couch in here anymore. I don't like the way that table looks." So, I assume there's probably a good sense that you got to save a little bit of money for some furnishings after you get settled.
Yeah. So it's funny because we had a great little house actually in Arlington Heights. Loved it. Fantastic Georgian. And we moved to a bigger home where we started a family. And it's so funny, Jim, I remember moving in, brought all our furniture. We had a ton of furniture in our old house. We brought it into the new house. You know, the new house is only 2,400 feet. It wasn't like this big, massive house. And it was like, it looked like someone robbed us. Like, we had no furniture. You realize when you get into your new house that, well, maybe I don't have that much furniture after all, right? Because, you know, you only had a living room now. You got a living room and a family room. You know, you don't have that big dining room table or your office
sure.
or your desk. So,
yeah.
So there certainly has to be some budget set aside for furnishings. You know, obviously you have furniture in most rooms in your house.
And one of my favorites is, and this is really for first-time home buyers or if you're moving into a bigger house, but the first time I think is, you don't realize all the tools you need until you become a homeowner. And stocking up on whether it's, you know, lawn care equipment or just tools for in the home, those tend to add up pretty quickly because you always need them for something.
Yeah, so I've had, you know, or if someone's going to cut the grass, they need a lawnmower. If someone's going to do the gardening, mm-hmm. they need the shovels and the wheelbarrow, and those are the kind of things, right, you need a budget for if that's the kind of person you are. Some of my clients just pay for someone to do all their stuff, and that's fine too. But certainly, even in the house, like you're saying, you're going to need just basic tools as well. But sometimes, by the way, if this is a good point, if someone's moving and they're to the state property or if they're moving out of state or out of the country, sometimes you say, hey, if you want to leave that stuff in the garage, whatever I don't need, I'll get rid of. And that's a good way for a buyer
okay.
to inherit, if they're a new buyer, a lot of good stuff that they don't have to go buy.
Great point. All right, about a minute left before I let you go. One thing we haven't talked about is buying a property that has HOA charges. Are those things that you should be able to know pretty well when you buy a home, what those look like for the near term, or can those change within a short term?
Yeah, you should know your monthly fees and stuff, but if the attorneys pull it and look at the meeting notes, you should be able to request meeting notes, budgets, all that sort of thing. You should have a pretty good handle on what anticipated potential costs could be coming up in the HOA. And if you know it, you can obviously get the seller to, you know, kick in for some of that. But that's just doing a due diligence in the HOA, which would be, in our state, we have attorneys in other states, you would just make sure that you ask for all that information to review it.
Excellent. Well, the last thing I'll ask you for, David, then once more is best way to get a hold of you, talk about website, email, phone number, whatever you'd like to share, because we want to make sure people follow up with you and get some more information from the Schwabe Group.
Yeah, give me a call or text anytime, 847-636-6747, 847-636-6747, or my web address is schwabegroup.com, so it's S-C-H-W-A-B, as in boy, E, group.com, and my email, David, @schwabegroup.com.
Excellent, David. Thanks for jumping on here. Great talking to you as always, and we'll look forward to our conversation next month. Everyone joining us, thanks, too, for being here. Always great to have you come along and listen. And again, be sure to get a hold of David at 847-636-6747. We'll talk to you again next month. Thanks.